So, everyone, welcome to the first ever episode of the Matador Revisionist History Podcast, where we're going to celebrate the truth and lies of the greatest artists in Matador recorded history. We're super lucky to be joined by Lindsay Jordan of Snail Mail, Mary Timoney, the solo artist and co-founder of the band Helium, along with countless other musical outfits, as well as Liz Fair, who needs no introduction. Thanks for joining us, you guys. So what's brought us together is the celebration of the 20th anniversary of Mary Timoney's Mountains, which is her solo debut and has recently been reissued as part of Matador's revisionist history. But actually, this is the debut of this podcast as well, so I thought we could begin with the topic of debuts. Lindsay's full-length Lush is a few years old, Mary's first solo record celebrating an anniversary, and Liz's debut album, The Incomparable Exile in Guyville, was released in 1993. What do you each remember feeling around the time of your debut? And I wonder if we could explore some commonalities there.
What do I remember about it? Sorry.
Your debut, like
the only one I have. I would say like I almost think it was like way easier than anything else that I've done since, because it just is like there's no expectations, and like also I guess there sort of are from like the standpoint of like, you know, like what people are expecting from like the few songs that they've heard. But like once you establish a vibe, it sort of feels like you either have to carry on the vibe, grow from the vibe, or change the vibe, which I think is ultimately stressful as hell. And I don't know, I do think that like the fact that you can kind of like mix and match all of the songs that you've ever written in your life, that leaves like what for me it was like 17 or 18 years worth of just like data, and it was super like chill. I felt nothing about it. Like I was like, this is so fun.
I don't know if you find this for your debut. I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but one of the things that you're saying about, you know, when you make your first record, you can choose from a lifetime's worth of songwriting because no one knows, you know, how old a song is at any point.
Right.
And I know that I put in songs that were like written the night before on my debut, you know, so when Exile in Guyville came out, some of those songs I literally screeched into the studio having finished them the night before. And some of them were things that I wrote in high school, you know, that
right.
I resurrected and changed. And so it's a debut for everyone else, but for us, I feel like our first records were almost like your senior thesis for what you've been doing for the last 6 or 7 years. Did you find that, Mary? Was that like
I'm just
part
thinking
of your...
about it. That makes so much sense. I'm thinking about it, and I feel like I made it's in a weird way. Like I feel like even the debut record, the first record that I ever really made, you know, like it was already a reaction against stuff I'd been doing before that. Like for the first Helium record was like really a reaction to what like these folk songs and stuff I've been writing that I never released. So it's weird. Like I don't think I ever really had a moment where I, you know, maybe a little bit, but I don't ever feel like I had a debut. It was always like reacting to something I'd done before. Like Lindsay was saying, where you're like reevaluating, like, what did I just do? How can I do this one different? I feel like I've always been in that mode, but I love the fact that you guys approached it that way. And I think it really shows in your debut records actually, because they're so wonderful. They're just like, both of them are just like, here I am. This is me. You know, and I love that about both of those records.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Did you think that you were gonna, like when I put out my first record, I don't know that I actually thought I would put out a second. I sort of thought this was my one and done.
Wow.
And I don't know if you guys, were you guys starting something in your mind? Did you picture the debut being followed by a career in songwriting, or like even if you went solo rather than being in a band, was it just like a one-off in your mind that then launched your careers?
I would say no. I think at the time, like it was kind of, I mean, like in the way that like I took 3 years to write the next one. And like it, the whole time I was like, I don't think I can do this. So I might end up just like doing something else. Like in that way, for sure. And like there were moments where I was like, I probably should just do something else.
But I get that. Oh my God.
Right.
I just have to say, I've been like that the entire time. Like, it's just been like, okay, well, I guess like I'm making a record. Like,
right.
And like it happens. And then afterwards I'm like, wait, I should do something else. I gotta go right. Be an office temp or something. Yeah, no, like every single time it feels like a struggle and I'm have to reevaluate and go like, but you know what? I actually had a realization that I think works with this. I was talking to my friend Joe, who does that Trap Set podcast. He's a really good friend. And we were just talking about how like part of being a creative person, like doing what we do, is that you have to constantly be evaluating yourself, you know, to know what you're doing next and to like figure out what the right thing to do next is for you and stuff. So I have to feel like you end up being like weirdly like kind of have to be in touch with yourself to like make it happen in a good way, or else it just gets fucked, you know, and you just end up like not being happy and not being able to work or be creative. So, but anyway,
yeah, that happened to me.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I remember with the second record, I was too self-conscious because I didn't expect to read all this stuff about myself.
Right. Yeah.
And I couldn't find my songwriting chops. And I remember turning in an early set of demos to a lawyer who said, Liz, nobody wants to hear 8 songs about the music business. Like, they don't want to. You had to like find a way to not be self-conscious to write from that same place of innocence again.
Wait.
In a weird way.
Well, I totally relate to what you're saying about evaluating it. It's like the first, well, that's another part of your debut is that it's shocking because for the first time people are reacting to it in a public way and you have to like deal with that in your brain, you know, like how do you take it in or not take it in or yeah, it's just a weird place to be. But I love that second record. So I don't know. I think it's fucking great.
I kind of think that it's like something that I only kind of just recently discovered about myself is like in order to do anything anywhere near songwriting, I have to be in like kind of what you're saying, like such a clear state of mind. But then second of all, like in touch with what I'm going for. I feel like I'm like a real like journal type of person, like a real like plan everything out, like map everything out. And I really it's like now it's I know it's the best time for me to write when I feel like it am like clear headed in like more ways than one. And then also when I'm like, when I feel like present and I'm like, actually this is what I'm going for. It's like really helped me to genuinely just be like, this song is about this. And then I'll write like a passage and be like, here, like, this is like a whole bunch of things about this thing. Or like, here's like ideas that come to mind, like things that are like senses, like smells and like all this stuff, whatever, not smells necessarily, but like imagery and shit. And then just taking from that and like making it rhyme. And then just like, once you're like, I don't hate any of this. That's when I'm like, okay, I'm in a headspace to write a song. But otherwise, I think it's such a deeply difficult place to reach. Like, it's almost like you at some point, like, I don't know. I can't say I've mastered anything, but like, it's almost like, it's like you kind of have to just teach yourself to like, to do this thing that is just so uniquely different an individual for every person. You like pave your
it's
own.
Like you have to artificially get into a place that before you came naturally. Like you would just feel like writing a song. So you wrote a song. Right. You didn't have to quantify why that was. And then when your career starts, you have to put yourself like you're saying. I think that's fascinating that you keep a journal of all the sensory elements that go into a song. I think that's amazing.
It's newer for me, but it has like really, really helped.
I was going to ask you each if you could talk about, beyond the sort of concept of the debut album, where you guys were in your lives and I guess burgeoning careers as you recorded and prepared to release those records.
Mary?
Okay.
I'm like, dude, Liz, Liz selecting Mary, that's my favorite thing that has begun. Like the dynamic.
Yeah, but Lindsay, you and I are going to jump in on top of people. We're going to. You know we will. We have no problem doing it. So we have to throw it to Mary because otherwise she'll be too polite.
I don't know.
You and I will be like.
Oh, no.
No, I like the... I'm liking the vibe. All right, look, all right, okay, sorry, okay. Run it.
What was I gonna say? Oh, okay, wait. What are we? What's the question?
The headspace that you were in. Paint us a little a portrait, Mary, if you would, of the headspace you were in when you were making your debut. Okay. As a solo artist, and then how that felt as you sort of went through the first couple, you know,
right.
Take us from right before I would say, to right
okay.
After.
First of all, I guess if I were really picking the record that felt like a debut to me, it would definitely be the first Helium record. That's and it sort of functioned in the same way. It just, but anyway, so that record really did feel like I was exploring a new world in my brain, and all of the stuff was totally brand new, and I was really excited about it and stuff. And it didn't feel like a reaction, like it felt like a debut record because it was all new, and I was really inspired by just stuff I was listening to, and things felt new.
Do you
and
remember
fresh. What I was listening to?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Curious. I mean, I was listening to like a lot of Dr. Dre and like Snoop Dogg at the time, and like really trying to make the stuff sound like that, but obviously a really fucked up version of that. But just like stuff like in Dr. Dre productions, like how there's like super low frequencies and super that really high whistly sound. I was like really trying to go for that. And then like we spent all this time trying to copy the sound of a cassette four track with this really fancy gear. Like I just like didn't know anything. And I was like Adam, the guy I was recording with, like, can we just make it sound more fucked up? Like, and like, so anyway, so that's what I was doing with that. And then, but with Mountains, it really was a reaction record. Like I had been on the road, not making any money, so straight, you know, like tour just fucking sucks. You know, it just, it's hard sitting in a van for 8 hours a day. And I was just done like with the music business, and the band was, Helium was kind of breaking up. And I just was like, I don't know what I want to do next. I fell into a depression, and the only thing way I could get out of the depression was by writing songs. And then I just captured the songs on, you know. And I was just like, I don't want to do this to make money anymore because it's just stressing me out. And I experimented with doing music to not, you know, just for me. And that's what Mountains is. And so as a result, people either seem to really get it or they really hate it. it's like people either really, like people that have had, here's what I think. People that have had clinical depression and like metaphors really understand it. People that just don't like, you know, I don't know, solo piano and the girl's voice don't like it. And they're like, why are you singing about goblins? That's so ha 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 ha. But
people
but anyway,
who don't
so
like to think.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's on me though, because I made all the lyrics super coded, like, because I was so insecure. So all the lyrics are like a basically description of being depressed and the voices you hear in your head. And then they're all kind of coded because I was insecure. And as a result, it does sound like I'm singing about Dungeons and Dragons characters. So anyway,
that's awesome.
That's my whole thing with that record. But anyway, yeah. Okay. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I love that. I love that about your music. It's like, I love that. It's like the prog rock element of like having like shit about like ghosts or like dragons, like, you know, like Dungeons and Dragons type stuff. Like, I actually love that about your music.
Thank
like,
you, Lindsay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like certain people get it. And like all that stuff is just metaphors for like, I feel like a guy, you know, or like I dated a shitty guy, so I called him a demon, but like that's not actually about a demon. It's about
right.
some dude who's anyway, but yeah, thanks, Lindsay. Okay, so okay, who's going next?
Lindsay.
All right. Liz is the boss. So what was the
question? I like that.
It was
the question is to you, Lindsay. Take us from, you know, just a few weeks before your debut came out, what you were feeling, and then as it came out, just take us to a couple clicks past its release.
Okay. So I was in high school, and I was at the time.
That's a mind blower right there.
I know.
I was trying to get a pass, like, for my principal so that I could miss more than 50 days of school, because we had, like, junior year, we were, like, already doing a little stuff, but senior year was when we had, like, the label offers and stuff, and I had already, like,
did you expect that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
I knew you at the time. I don't know. I think you were pretty, like, whoa, what's going on?
I feel like I wasn't like a jerk about it or anything, but I definitely could just see that the way that people were reacting was, like, intense. And I just, like, the way that the intensity was, like, when we were a DIY band, like, playing basements, was, like, also intense. And I kind of just had a feeling that, like, people connected with it in a way that was, like, really personal, and they were, like, really, like, protective of it, and, like, really, like, they were like, this is about my, like, relationship, like, in this kind of, like, insane way. And just, like, kind of the way it was set up, like, the way that, like, when the record was going to come out, like, there was all these tours, like, for the next year of my life, and, like, I just decided I wasn't going to college and all this stuff. And so I kind of was, like, in the headspace that I didn't necessarily think it was going to be, like, too big or anything, but I was like, I do think that, like, I cannot go to college and it'll be chill. And then a couple weeks.
Was that a hard decision? Was that, like, something you were wrestling with when it was about to come out? Or did you feel like when it came out, that was the decision right there? Or did you still feel like you could decide?
I feel like college or not? I feel like I decided just a little before it came out. It was hard only because I had already, like, really given up the concept of doing this for a job. Like, as a child, I was always like, because I started playing guitar when I was, like, really, really young. And I started writing songs when I was, like, 13 or 14. And I was like, I want to do this so bad. And just enough, like, adults being like, that's not something that is real. I was just like, oh, okay. I was pretty like, okay, I want to be an English major. And I was pretty like, that's cool. Like, I like English too. I like reading. I like writing. So I had pretty much given up on it, and I was kind of at peace with that. And then when we were doing, like, DIY tours and stuff, and pretty quickly it was like to the next step. And at that point, I kind of was pretty much told by everyone that if I tried to do both, it wouldn't be, like, good. And so the decision was only hard because it just didn't feel like I had to get excited about the dream, because I was like, well, I don't know. I taught myself forever that that was not going to happen. So, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't necessarily hard. It just felt unrealistic. Like, I felt like, also just like, I really cared about school. So I was just like, I was a little like, not sad. I'm definitely like, I'm so happy, but just a little like,
sure. Hard choice. Shaken up. You were looking at two things that could have an impact on your life. I think that's the thing with debut records. Like, for all of us, they have an impact on your life, and you can control some of what that's going to be, but some of it, you know, is like a trust fall, and right, there's scary stuff down there. So, like, there, I think we all were aware, even though you were quite young, like, that there are consequences to your decisions at that point. These are, like, your first adult decisions, really.
Right. And I also had, like, a lot of conflicts with, like, the press cycle and things in my high school. Like, it was, like, dramatic. You know what I mean? And I was like,
I remember that, Lindsay, because yeah. I was talking to you a bunch at the time. I was, like, definitely remember being not being sure what to tell you, because you would talk about the high school versus college thing, and I didn't want to step in, like,
right,
because I didn't want to, like, influence you, but I was just listening, and I could tell how that was hard. But I think you made the right decision, obviously.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Well, I guess I'll just say I met Lindsay when she was about 15 at a show at the Black Cat, because you'd heard I was teaching lessons, and you came up to me because you knew my student Anna, right?
Anna. And I was it an X Hex show, or was it someone else?
I don't even think that was just a random show, probably.
I might have, maybe it was.
I don't know. Yeah.
Or part of me kind of thinks that was a Thurston Moore show, but maybe not.
Yeah.
I guess we just met then, and my friend was taking lessons from Mary. And
right.
I was like coming to a point with the teacher that I'd been working with where I just felt like it was like had been flat lined for several years. And it was something that I didn't even think about because I was like, well, you know, like, but then at some point I was like, damn, it'd be cool to like learn something. And I knew Anna just from like going to shows, and she was like, yeah. Oh, my teacher is Mary. She's awesome. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, I know.
You didn't need to learn. You're already so good. You came over and I was like, I don't know what we're going to do because she totally slays. So then we just, and yeah, I mean, you were obviously so good. So there wasn't really much for you to learn, but we took apart those television songs, which was really fun.
Yeah. We started with, what did we do? We did,
See No Evil.
And Venus.
And Venus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, there was a part in the See No Evil solo that's really hard where it's like the, hammer on pull off thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I still do that sometimes.
And I didn't want to tell you, but I couldn't even do it. So I was like, all right, Lindsay, let's play it solo. Let's just slow it down. We'll play it really slow.
Damn,
you totally ripped on it.
You could definitely play that solo. I feel like we didn't have it that slowed down. It's not.
But you know what part I'm talking about? It's like
I do. Yeah, I literally just ripped it a little for something I was working on.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah,
so. That's so awesome. So you guys are like bonding over guitar playing too. Like that was a major part of it. It wasn't just songwriting. You were like,
yeah, no, it was guitar classes.
Guitar players.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was really just like she'd come over for a lesson and we would play. I would have the tab for the television songs, and then you would do like the Tamburlaine part and whatever. Like
we jammed it.
The songs are amazing. Actually, that first television record is so good for learning guitar because it's like the guitar parts are panned. So you can sit here with the speaker, your left speaker off, and just hear Richard Lloyd, that guy, his, and then you turn that speaker off and then you just hear the Tamburlaine part. It's amazing. So we would do that.
That's so cool.
It was fun. Yeah, we didn't. I mean, then we would like talk about like what you were up to with the band. I mean, I was there when Lindsay Jordan played her first show. I saw your first show at St. Stephen. I was hanging out with your mom and we were so proud of you. It was fucking awesome. It was at St. Stephen, I think. I saw the solo show at St. Stephen. I don't know if that was your first show.
Oh, yeah. That was
my first show. You were like the proud guitar teacher
absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I came to see you play and I just remember having this feeling. I was like, whoa, this is like really fucking good. Just had that like magical quality. I mean, that was cool. And then we would talk about like you putting your band together
and I
remember your first tour and I was in your van, getting the van and how stressful the van, do your band breakdowns. I don't know. So anyway. Yeah.
The van broke down a lot.
Yeah. I gave you
advice too, Lindsay. Remember, I was not even shy. I was like, you were telling me we were in Barcelona, and you were asking me. You said you were exhausted and you wanted to take a break, and I told you you couldn't.
Oh yeah. In the one hotel's cafeteria area.
Yes.
I was like, Liz is over there. Whoa. Let's go.
That's like probably really good advice.
Yeah.
I don't know if she took it. I don't know if she took the advice.
I totally took it. No, I didn't take it because I took a several year hiatus.
And I was like, don't do it. You're just, I used the analogy of trying to get a semi trailer truck rolling. You know, those people, those strong men pull like a semi trailer truck from a standstill to like rolling it with their teeth or something or whatever.
Yeah,
and I'm like, every time you take time off from your career, which is rejuvenating for a songwriter. I mean, that's like when you start living again and you start to actually have something to say. But for your career, you've got to get that semi truck rolling again from a standstill. And it's much easier to just keep it rolling when it's rolling.
But what if you burn? But do you? Okay, so
sure. If you burn out, when you bring in depression and you bring in writer's block, you have to take a time out. But she didn't strike me that that was what was going on.
Right, she was at an early part of I gotcha.
I will say, we overdid it a little in the beginning, and I think that was the big that was the downfall that caused the entire like, oh, like I need to take a break thing.
Of course. And I've done that. Of course. And that always happens when if you overdo it. Yeah.
In a way, like I think we really probably should have come out with something like a year and a half ago, 2 years, but I'm so glad that it didn't come out in Rona times.
I think like, you did it right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The way I was feeling then, I was just so cloudy that even the concept of writing a song just made me feel stressed. I was like deeply under the impression that it was imposter syndrome guiding me along. Like, and I think that's pretty, wow. I think that's like pretty streamlined because it's like you make a couple songs and people are like, yeah, and it's the same thing. Or it's like, you know, you spent your whole life writing them. So it's like, it really could have just been a fluke. And then when I started working on the second one, it took me 2 years to make one song.
Well,
because I was just like, wow, it's just the confidence has to be there. Like the, like, it feels like, but honestly, it's like, I still don't really have a system because it took me so long. So
it's okay though. I mean, I really feel like it's, you got to balance like the self-care with the career. And like, I don't know. And it's always like, you just have to keep figuring it out. I feel like, because wait, Liz, you gotta go. We skipped your turn. You gotta go your turn about.
That's okay. In my mind, in my mommy mind, I was already ballparking that I discussed the debut in other ways.
No. It's your turn.
But okay, my turn is when Guyville was about to come out. I had made a break from working with someone that I was rooming with, who, I felt was just not understanding what I wanted. I always have this problem in the studio.
Wait, really rooming? Like a recording what do you artist. Mean rooming? Rooming with? I'm sorry, rooming with?
My roommate, whose name is John Henderson, heard my demo tapes or whatever, the cassettes, that the girly sound stuff, and wanted to make a record with Brad Wood, who lived in the neighborhood. He like knew him and thought we could get a good price. So I followed him down this path for a little bit, and then we ended up fighting in the studio. And I went back to Brad a couple months later to finish the record. So, and then Matador had it. Oh. And I remember very distinctly, maybe it's because of the lyrics that I put in my record, but right before it came out, I was sleeping. I spent the night at my parents' house. And I woke up in a cold sweat with like total terror. I remember going to my closet, I don't know why, and just thinking, like, I've got to stop this from coming out. Like, I have to, my parents are going to die when they hear this. You know, like, what have I done? And I would say I feel that way. That happened on my first record. I feel that way just about every time I put a record out. Like, there's this moment of, like, it's too late. It's gone to the presses. I've got to stop it. Like, my life will be ruined, you know. And that's not entirely not true either. My life was kind of ruined.
Wait, wait, hold on. How was your life ruined?
Well, I don't know if you guys, maybe you do, maybe you don't relate to this, but the world I came from, like, people just don't make rock records, nor do they make like trash talking, saucy, raunchy lyrics. And I felt like I was coming out as the person I was inside that I never showed on the outside.
Which is why everybody loves it, because it's wonderful, you know, and it's like, it's so vulnerable and so open. But I totally hear you about that. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
That's something that I strongly relate to as a touchstone for my debut record, Exile in Guyville. And I wondered if you guys, I'm curious if you guys go through the same thing ever. Like, and I guess we were circling that. We were circling different ways, you know, choosing college or a music career, that you can't have both, or that, you know, with you, Mary, like solo or with a band, you know, these decisions that you make that are going to have ramifications that you have to wait to watch play out, and yet you're intimately connected to the work itself, so there's no going back.
Yeah, I mean, well, hold on. I really find this whole thing so interesting, what you're saying about the panic attack, about you've just made this masterpiece and you were so vulnerable and so yourself, and then that's really scary. And I get it. I've done that myself also.
That's how I think of putting out records. Like, I think of that as sort of emotional crucibles that you have to go through.
Well, that's why that's when you know you've probably know you've made a good record, I think.
No, you're right. Because the ones that I don't feel that way about, I don't really care about.
You don't get scared about, you mean? Like,
if I'm not scared to put it out, it probably isn't my best work. Probably.
Isn't it funny? I mean, it probably should be the opposite. Like, I'm just thinking of my own records. Like, the ones I should have been scared about.
I wasn't scared about. Yeah. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
No, I think it makes so much sense because when it's scary to be vulnerable because, you know, like people are going to, you know, they could criticize you, you know, and you weren't just being vulnerable. It's like you're saying you came. Well, another thing I really relate to is saying how you came from a world where people weren't making, you know, in your family life or what people that you knew when you're growing up. No one was in the music business probably. Right. And you know. Right. Yeah. Me too. And was already in, I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe we came from the last generation where rock and roll is like still pretty rebellious, I guess. You know, it was a rebellious career path for sure.
Well, it's funny because they were when they were discussing the prompts for this conversation between us, I saw something that I don't know if you guys notice about the fact that we're all Matador artists is that Matador sort of in the label itself has this ambivalence to its aesthetic. Like, they like people that are ambivalent about what they're doing at any given time. Like,
whoa.
That's the music that they like.
Well, really? Oh, wait. How? Okay,
I think so.
Was that a 90s thing, though, maybe? Wasn't that?
It could be a 90s thing, but there's still this sense of, like, I should maybe be doing something else with my life, but I'm going to make music. Like, I feel like that it is a strong imprint in the label.
That is so interesting. Well, I mean, I guess, like, okay, I could see. Wait, who? What other artists are we? Do you want to name any names? Okay.
I just get the feeling, and maybe you're right,
Ice Age.
This is a 90s thing, that they're from the past when they talked about Matador being a place where it was the truth and shit we just made up. Like, we made up all of our bios. We would fuck with mainstream press just to be obnoxious. Like, there was this real sense of we could make money at this, but maybe, you know, maybe we don't give a fuck. You know, like, there's this weird sense of self-sabotage that runs through my work and runs through most other artists' work on Matador. Don't you think that?
Absolutely. I mean, just speaking for myself, I have self-sabotaged so much of my career. So, yes. But I also think, like...
Quintessential Matador artist.
Yeah, but I also think that's a real 90s thing. I mean, it was still, you know, we were still coming from punk in a way. I think so. You know, the whole like slacker indie rock thing was still coming from that, the whole like a punk aesthetic kind of. And I mean, personally, I grew up around the punk scene in DC where it was like, you know, it was just its own thing, so removed from music business. And then when I ended up working with a band and on a label, I was really like kind of like confused about, you know, where my allegiances were or something. Yeah, like, I was like, but I was supposed to not do this because it's not cool. But anyway, so yeah, I think that I don't know what it is. That's an interesting thing that you've. But wait, do you see that in how do you see that in yourself, Liz?
Everywhere. I feel that I'm always trying to straddle two states of being. And I guess my music is where I describe both states, but I hopefully wind up in the more authentic, rooted one. But there's a lot of ambivalence and self-sabotage along the way.
Wait, so can I just understand, what are the two states? There's the authentic Liz, and then what's the other one?
To do what is more expected of you.
Even
if we're talking about indie rock, like even indie rock, I was in opposition to them as well. So like I sense that Matador chooses or selects or is attracted to artists because no matter what their context, they're standing in ambivalence to that context. Even if they're really loud on stage as a Matador artist, they're probably not moving much. Or if they're loud and they're moving around and breaking shit, they probably all come from really good families. Like, there's always something in them that they're in opposition to. That's what I feel. And even though Lindsay, like with Snail Mail, is obviously recent and current, her attitude just feels so familiar to me. Like, I speak that language, I guess, maybe. And I feel like I speak your language. I feel like the best thing about the music business now, and I will bring in the women in music topic, is that everybody, I speak that native tongue, and I see it so many places now. And back in the day, I felt like I only related to a couple people. I didn't feel as connected to the guys as I probably should have that I was touring with. Even though I liked them, I didn't feel like it was the same journey that I was taking.
Uh-huh.
And now that there's so many women in music, yes, doing whatever they're doing, but I speak that language, so I, yeah, know what they're doing. I
can, yeah, finally, like, it's like, finally it's cool to be a girl playing music. Like, we were such, yeah, outsiders. It was like you were like a female auto mechanic or like a garbage man or something. But now it's like, yeah, now it's like, oh wait, women are cool. Like, there's guitar companies that are like thinking that women are like the next thing in guitars. I heard like from like someone that worked, I don't want to name the name of the brand, but I was like, oh man, like someone that worked at this brand
and
is,
I think,
like, yeah. Wait,
oh, I was just going to finish. I have a thought, like, just to finish this off.
Yeah.
Like, I think when female artists are rubbed wrong by interviewers or interviews in which they sort of say, women in music, women in rock, what do you think? It's not because we don't want to talk about it. It's because the person interviewing is not a native speaker of that language. And if we could be speaking about it from a sense of fluency, like that is when we would open up and start just, you know, running with the conversation, and that it's the problem of still being perceived as other or,
right,
marginalized or somehow like set aside,
right,
as different, that shuts us down. And we're
that
like, mm-hmm,
totally
women,
makes sense.
Women in rock. Cool, cool, cool.
No, that this being seen as other, I think you nailed that. Wait, but Liz, what is the language of that you speak that we all, that you're saying that you feel like is being spoken now?
Creative authorship. Like, we are the authors of how we have input in how it looks, how it sounds, what,
okay,
how we recorded it,
right,
like what references you guys were talking about, like, and Lindsay was saying she was ripping off a small segment of television solo, whatever, like the references that we're making, the references that we're pulling from, and,
gotcha,
the authorship, like the true authorship of what we do. You can tell when a woman is put into a band to be the woman in the band and when she's the one driving the creative force. You can just tell.
Yeah.
I felt pretty like intensely about what you were saying about Liz, about the like thing. I just didn't know when to speak. I was like, well, hold on, I'll just wait for a sec. But then we got like six topics later, but I was like, wait, I definitely still have something to say.
Go for it.
About the fact that you feel that way with your record, because I also feel that way with my records, and very much the one that I just finished. Or I guess, well, whatever. Cat's out of the bag. It doesn't matter. But because it literally, like, I personally feel that, like, I cannot... Like, I definitely think I could make lyrics sound pretty and, like, poppy. Like, I could for sure put some lyrics down that, like, sound pleasant to listen to. But it feels unfinished to me unless it feels, like, heart-wrenchingly, like, personal. And almost, like, I almost don't feel comfortable, like, playing the song for people if it doesn't feel like an intimate moment that they're, like, interrupting. For some reason, it's just, like, yes, whenever I'm on tour, even I notice with the songs on Lush, like, even when the events, like, weren't things that I cared about anymore that I was writing about, like, the fact that the songs came from such, like, a deeply honest and embarrassing place are the only reasons that I, like, even continued in, like, playing them and enjoying it. And I think, like, I don't know, my new one is, like, a lot of it is, like, so personal, and you don't want to reveal yourself to the person that you're singing about, and you don't want to fucking reveal yourself to everyone as like, I don't know, like weak. And like, you, I don't, even going back as far as like, none of the, there's no female pronouns on any of the snail mail stuff in the past because I just wasn't out. I was just in high school, wow. You know, stuff like that, where it's just like, if you even take it to that level where it's like being vague just to keep yourself safe, yeah. Or whatever.
Yes.
And you could take it like literally and be like saying like, oh, now I say her and she, or you could also take it like, I'm singing about something that is so personal and embarrassing and like emotional that it's embarrassing and scary to have people know that A, I feel this deeply, and B, that I feel this deeply about these things. Like, people are going to know what you're talking about, like things like yeah. that. Or it's just like, it is really like fucking like, can I curse?
Yes.
Fuck. It's like getting fucking, it's just like getting fucking naked in the lobby of the apartment. Yeah. And like reading the diary. Like, it's just like, that didn't make sense. But you know what yes. I mean? Like,
no, it absolutely
that made perfect
makes
sense.
Yeah.
I just want to say something. One thing, though, that I see in your music, Lindsay, it's so interesting to hear you say this because I feel like you have a really – you're vulnerable but in a really composed kind of – it feels to me like a very self-assured vulnerability, which is cool, which is strong, I think.
It's actually so gnarly in a bad way to describe – the way that has changed to be worse. It's like much more. It's
that's
like
okay.
much.
That's good. That's good.
I would say it's just gotten more.
Painful.
More. Right.
That's what
it's more.
Want.
It's more like. It's just more like self deg. Like it's like I feel more comfortable. I feel comfortable enough. Like it is an improvement for me. Like emotionally, I feel liberated enough to degrade myself. Like now, but I in a way, like it sounded so much more confident before because now I'm saying lyrics. Like I'm not gonna reveal my fucking lyrics, but basically, like in the newest stuff that I've been working on, it's just so much more like, damn, I hate myself. I miss you, baby. But it's like the fact that I can even say that is just now as opposed to when I wrote the last album when I was 16, that it's just like 15, whatever.
Gotcha.
You know, it is growth, but also in a way it's like a, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, but you're opening up more, which is really good. Cause that's what people like. I mean, that's what connects people to the music is
right.
vulnerable like that. That's exactly why people like.
And I think even when we're singing in code, when you were asking me what I meant by fluency, like even though some of my favorite songs of yours, Mary, are kind of coded lyrically, you know, like I speak that language. I know what you're talking
thank
about.
You.
Like I can instantly, fluently understand it. And it's that's that special thing. And I think of Lindsay when she's describing this, like you do become like SEAL Team 6 or something. You can go into the most terrifying places where you don't know what you feel and you're embarrassed to show. You feel like it's going to wreck people's perception of you because of, like you said, I mean, even saying the word weak, I was wondering what you were going to say, Lindsay. I was like, what word is she going to land on? And you landed on weak because it's the most embarrassing word. Like
yeah.
you actually did it in the moment. You showed and not told right there because that's the terror, the weakness. And
yeah.
we become good at it and we crave that assignment. We're like, okay, you know, and not always. If your life is so fucked up that you can't go in there, you know you got to change your life.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
right. And you can kind of learn from your songs, I guess, when it's fucked up, you know.
Totally.
That's really true.
And it's cool to like, well, I don't know, in the, as like a B-side to the same thing. I'm like so into this one topic. It's just also even the recording process, I think it should be like extremely emotional. Like if you're not like playing the song, like I, or at least for me, like it has to be like, there's a tear in my eye, like while I'm recording it, even though I wrote it like 3 years ago, like there needs to be a tear in my eye. Like, it's just like, yeah. if I don't feel like something every time I hear it or play it, like I would anyone's song that I love, like truly love, then like I know that it's not good enough for me. That's how I don't know.
No, I totally agree. But I have definitely put out a lot of songs where I didn't feel that I've done that assignment.
That when you what? Wait, say that again. When you didn't feel what?
I have put out songs, material, where I didn't feel like I took it to that level, where I just like,
oh yeah,
you know, when you can yeah. write a clever lyric and you're like, that is just too clever and cute not to put on. And then you're like, oh, shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, dude, but Liz, you are actually exempt from any kind of you basically wrote the song Why Can't I? So you don't have to like abide by any rules.
You kind of don't. Good. You can't really
you guys
fuck up.
I have to tell you how funny this is, but like in my other life, like when my son was younger and I would go in the town I live in to like these fancy lady gatherings, and like there's one that I was part of called Bunko, like I cannot tell you how many women who I don't think have an artistic bone in their body will come up to me, grip my arm and say, that song, Why Can't I, just speaks so deeply to me. It is such a profound song. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Oh, wow.
Like, that's my least profound song in a way. And yet the whole idea of like, you know, we haven't fucked yet, but we're already starting or whatever the hell. They're just like, that saved me, you know? And you're like, okay, yeah. See, for everybody out there. There's like,
yeah,
that's what people need music for, I guess is what I'm saying.
I have to say that is incredible that, well, I mean, there's something that you do, Liz, where you can really connect with people. Your lyrics really connect. It's like, I mean, sure, you've heard this a million times, but it's like when you listen to your music, it's like I feel like you're like right here talking to me. Like I'm having a conversation with
Aww.
You.
That's my ideal. That would be
yeah, that's
perfect.
What it's like. I mean, and it's kind of the same thing. I feel the same thing when I listen to Lou Reed. It's like a converse. He's like talking to you. You feel like you know him. And then people really, I think I'm sure other people feel that about listening to you.
I love that. Thank
so
you.
I think it's a real skill to be able to just throw something out that you weren't feeling deeply and have it connect with people. That means you know how to connect. In your music. You know what I mean? If like that was something that you weren't even feeling that strongly and then it connects with all these people, that's a skill. Yeah.
Apologies. I'm hesitant to jump in at all. And you're all sort of touching on it as you go and songs. But one great benefit we have of hosting this podcast on Spotify is that we can integrate the music in a really interesting way. It's the reason we asked each of you to highlight some of the other's music to sort of touch on. If you wanted to move into thinking about specific songs of one another's, that could be a good segue to our second half.
Okay, well, I had to do some notes. It's one of those things where I genuinely feel like there are like so few times where I find myself like talking to songwriters where I am just like so, where I just like admire them so much. And usually like, I don't know, it's a unique situation here that for me, that you guys are both artists that I love. And just like, I'm so excited to even be in this conversation. And like, so this was actually pretty daunting. I was like, the notes, I was like, I had to like, I like crossed some off. I like, you know, I had to like, it was hard for me to pick some. But anyway.
Look at all of my notes.
It's really like, I don't know, it's like, yeah, it's pretty intense.
Don't feel, it's okay. I did the same thing.
But,
okay.
Okay, well, Mary, my favorite Helium song is Ocean of Wine. I love that song. I feel like I just go back to it always, like forever. Like since I've heard it, I go back to it. Like it's like one of those things where like if it's on my shuffle or anything, like it's just like, I don't know, like I just can't turn it off. It's my fucking song.
Yeah.
favorite thing about it is I think like your melodies, like I can never predict them. I love that in songwriting. I'm always just like, okay, cool. That's like, it's like when it's like a satisfying note that you hit, but you don't, I don't expect it. And that is always really exciting to me because I just love to pick things apart. And then the same thing, actually, it's funny that it came up before because it's like all over my notes, is that I love the way that all of your lyrics are. I love like all the imagery on that record. And
thanks so much, Lindsay.
It's cool to me like how that song grows. It just fucking, all the layers are so cool. They're also like, there's not a layer in there that's just a layer to be a layer. All the layers are sick and necessary. Thanks. And then I love Pat's Trick. That song is so sick. Section at the end where it you are the most that is just it's just stuck in my head for infinity. I just like I think that song's so cool. Thanks. I think that music video is so cool. I think the whole like energy, the like emotion in the song and the energy is like really conveyed in how you're singing it. Love that.
Oh cool. Thanks, Lindsay.
And, yeah, dude, I love your guitar playing, of course, always. And then
it's getting real embarrassed here.
Can I sneak in? With Mary stuff, are you like, I just want to talk about X-Hex Waste Your Time.
So that,
like, oh, I know. Thanks, so, I love that her fingers go right up with like the rock song. It's like the rock song. Yeah, like full on. That's one of those times where I like had to make sure that was your guitar. You know, like where I actually had to make sure that was you because it was so brilliant the way the melody would echo the guitar line, like they were almost call and responding through that with this kind of way of, it's almost like you digested classic rock and then spit it back out in this completely original way.
You guys, stop. I can't even take this in. You're too nice to me.
Well, you got to take more. You have to take more. I'm not even done.
I can't handle it.
And then... The insouciance, I loved what Lindsay said, and this is true for her as well, is the unpredictability of where you're going to go next and where you're going to land. And you're like creating these, like these new cannons, like you're shooting at the cannon target to like create new classics, but it's always original. And so like, you don't know where you're going to end up. And it's always really fascinating to create new neural pathways of like, that's catchy, you know, but it's totally original and fresh. I love it.
You guys, I can't handle this. Jesus Christ. Thank you.
I would second
that's
all
insane.
That.
That's insane. Thank you guys. Jeez. I don't know. It's like really appreciate it.
You do not like
it.
To take compliments.
Oh yeah, I know, but I really appreciate it. You guys. Thank you. I don't know. Whew. It's a lot for me to take in.
It's a lot.
I mean, it's because it's you guys, and I fucking love you both so much. So that just means a lot. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Wait, am I supposed to
respond
to that?
Proud to be working alongside.
I was just going to go, I was going to start onto my Liz section, and then I was like, well, right. I'll just do Liz. And then that's just what came to my mind. I don't know. Okay. Unless you want to...
No, all let's right. do it that no, way. Let's do it that way. Range.
Okay.
Okay.
Liz?
Yep.
It's okay. So my all-time favorite of all time is actually, I mean, the first one I heard like on the radio as a child was Why I Can't I, like all the time. I loved that song. But the first one that I heard and was like, oh, it's like, this is Liz Phair, was Fire Up the Batmobile. And
oh my God.
Oh my God. God, that song is sick. That melody, like that the way that it starts. Yeah, the vocal melody, the rhythm that you're playing on guitar is like just the basis for what I'm pretty sure like everything I like is. I don't know, that song is like I don't know, it's just like whenever it starts I just get a chill, and that's I feel like all you even need to say about it is like the emotional response that it elicits just by like literally starting is just crazy. Like there was like a moment where actually one of my like friends from like when I've known forever downloaded all the girly sound stuff like onto my phone when I was like I don't know perfect 14. 14 or 15, and you can, I didn't know where to like find it. I didn't know anything about indie rock. I didn't know anything like,
perfect.
And that was like one of the first things I listened to in that like world. And it also was like, I don't know why this was the one that always played, but when it was like the only things that I had on my iTunes, cause it was post iTunes world. And, it was the song that played every time I plugged my phone into my car when I was like 16, and I was like, first.
It
and
was it, the start up and go. That's well, awesome.
It started to like really drive me crazy because I was like, I don't want to like stop liking this song, but I still love it. So, and then my other one was Shane. I love that song. I think it's
that was mine.
Well, I got into deep Shane specific. I love that song. That song is so cool. It's just like cool. It's like also you gotta have fear in your heart. That is like, pew. I was like, chill. That's so good. And then it's like really like all the instrumentation, like everything. It's like so dark. Love that. And also the first time that I heard the first section become the second section, like the first time I ever heard that song, I just like flipped. I was like, wow. All right.
You know,
yeah,
what's so funny when you were talking about like your earliest experiences, like in when you're putting out your debut and how you were listening to Dre and all this kind of stuff. I remember when girly sound was happening, listening to a lot of hip hop too, because that was like rap and hip hop were basically not starting, but hitting mainstream. And I remember always wanting, when I was doing girly sound, I would do what I called mashups, but it was really that recombinating that rap and hip hop did, where it was like, yeah, we're going to take an element from this song and mash it up with this song and put them on top of each other. It's kind of like salad making of musical parts that was happening then. And so I would go from verses to choruses that were almost totally unrelated, and like Frankenbirth.
Wow.
Two different songs into one.
Huh. That's interesting because I don't, wow. I mean, everything always works so well in your songs, like segues like that. It all makes sense. So I wouldn't expect that to be a way that you worked at all.
I'm very cannibalistic. I will take my other songs really? And like chop them up. Even on the new record that's coming out, I have songs that are completed in totally different fashion, like different lyrics, different melody. I'll do that a lot.
Wow.
Do you guys do that?
I think... I try, but it doesn't work. And I'm really, really excited to hear you say that, because that gives me hope. Because I it's something I try. It doesn't usually work for me. And then I tell myself, like, oh, it should just all flow out, and like, you shouldn't chop things up. But it's great. It's so great to hear.
That's interesting. I'm surprised to hear that. I would think that you do, judging from your music. I feel like.
No, I don't know.
Maybe your brain does it.
Maybe I try. Yeah, I don't know. But that's really cool. But did you do that with, okay, well, hold on. So now it's my turn. It's hard. Okay. So it's really hard for me to, okay. First of all, I listen to, Exile in Guyville, Whip Smart, like nonstop. I mean, I think I got the cassette of Exile and I just had it in my car, and I would just get in my car and it was always on, you know? And this was like,
This is a theme that's beginning 93? To make me uncomfortable. What's going on with the car and the music?
Okay. Well, why is the car?
Well, because Lindsay's like, because she was like, I don't want to start hating this song
just here, you know, it was so empowering to me. Like, I had already started. Being, you know, I think I must have been like, it must have been my first year out of college. And I had already started, you know, writing songs and stuff, but you just were so inspiring, because it was like the whole Riot Grrrl thing was going on. And like, I was like back and forth to DC a lot. So those guys all lived here, like, you know, like Bratmobile and Bikini Kill. And I was around that energy here in DC. But I feel like your whole thing was that you took that energy and you just made fucking awesome songs. And songs that you could listen to over and over again. And you were just so empowering. And not only were the songs and the lyrics and your personality and stuff empowering, but the way it was recorded, everything about it was just super great. So you... made a really big impact on me
at that age.
And weirdly, I actually wanted to ask you about Shane, and I can't believe Lindsay chose that one too. That's wild.
This is awesome.
That's so cool. But I mean, honestly, like, yeah, it's like the sound, like, it's just like the sounds are so intriguing. Like the cymbals, like, pretty loud and washy. And like, I remember like listening to it again in my car and just go, you know, feeling super inspired to just do whatever the fuck I wanted to do with music. You know, it was like,
yes,
she did that.
Yes.
And it's like,
that
kind of sounds different than other music. And it's, yeah, that, you know, the feeling.
I think I make art rock, and I think I'm misunderstood in that respect. I feel like I'm painting. I feel like I'm painting with sound. So right. When I go into a like music studio, I'm pushing, and some people like it, some people don't, like, take this weird sound and make it go over this part, like it's an arc, you know, like just painting with, and working with Brad on this new record reminded me, like, he totally is there too, because his sounds are so gorgeous that we work well together. Like, he makes the thing into this special thing, and then I paint it over this section, and, you know, it's kind of
right.
That's how we work.
That's a really good collaboration then. And like, when you're saying some people get it and some people don't in the studio, I think you got to work with the people that get it, because that's great. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
that's what I find in my
own. Did you guys have good working experiences on your debuts? Were they hard to get done?
Wait, hold
Were they
on.
Easy
Wait,
to get
you're
done?
Trying to change the subject here.
Sorry.
I just want to ask you about Shane.
Yes, I do know him.
So here, so when I was thinking about this, I was like trying to think of the song I would ask you about. And I selfishly, for both of you guys, chose songs that, because I like all your stuff, but I chose songs that I just want to know more about the lyrics, because for very selfish reasons. So that's one of the reasons why I chose Shane, because I want to know, what does fear, you got to have fear in your heart, mean to you, or does it mean anything? Or is it, are you like, anyway, what's the song about?
It was about my friend Shane that I dated on and off in college, and he has I've put him in a couple different songs, elements of our time together. He was a little bit in Divorce Song. That was a car trip we took, although we weren't married. But he was doing for Shane that was this night that we spent where he was writing for magazines, and it was the night of the Gulf War, which I don't know, Mary, you know, Lindsay wouldn't remember,
but
it was the first sort of shock and awe televised campaign that America had put out to show that we were going to blast a less powerful country into oblivion. It was a shock and awe type thing. And there was something so horrific about televising and staging what was essentially, you know, bloody combat that way. And he was going all over the city, and I just tagged along with him, asking people if they understood, while they're like drinking and hanging out, what had changed in the world, like what this action that we had instigated was going to do and what the implications were for us as a warfare state. You know, in a way, I almost see that as the beginning of the never-ending war that America has engaged in, like constantly in conflict, which it may or may not have been. I don't know that much about history, but we were just all over the city going into bars and places that we liked going to. And he was asking people. I thought it was brilliant. I'm like, if this is what it means to be a reporter, I could totally do this, you know, like just going to like Raw Bar or, you know, Metro or whatever, and getting quotes from people. So that's what that was about.
That's awesome. Okay.
And fear in your heart, fear in your heart is emotional. It's not just about the big picture of you can't totally trust everyone in the world. You can't trust what motivations are, and you may never be able to get to the truth of something. But fear in your heart as well, for self-protection, because you can be as close and as intimate as it is physically possible to be and still be totally estranged emotionally. So like the fear in your heart means you have enough emotion within you to know when it's disconnected, or to know when you're about to lose someone you love, or when they're pulling away from you, or what, you know, whatever it is. That's sort of how I see it. Fear, wow. Fear in your heart means you have a heart to feel fear.
Okay, I get it.
I think the way that you can describe that song that eloquently, like in that much of the way that the song has that much of a meaning, like that makes me like it 10 times more. That's so sick.
Wow.
When you're listening to the song, it has this quality where you don't really need to know what you're singing about. You just feel that you know, like what it means. But then when you really start thinking about it, like I was the other day, I was like, actually, what does that mean? Like, I feel like but you kind of know with your gut. So like, anyway, I mean, it all makes sense. I felt like it was probably, I have this picture of this, you know, you in a specific situation. So it all makes sense that it was like a story pretty much that you were telling that actually happened. It's great. It's fucking great.
Thank you. It was fun to write. It's fun to keep a record of your life through songs, to be able to look back and be like, that's when I did that. That's when I did that. I should do that more.
But you do it.
I should do that more. I do. Sometimes I don't. I mean, don't you feel like songwriting is such a moving target? You can be in any quadrant and do a great song in that quadrant, but you're missing maybe more of that other quadrant. Like, there's chronicling, you know, so you can put your life down in song, kind of like a folk singer, like this happened, this happened. Then there's secret messages to the unrequited love person, which we all do, don't lie.
Right. I've only
every
done it for like
one.
I never did that, you guys, until recently. I had to be
what?
Like over 40 to start doing that because I was so scared.
What?
I was so scared.
Really?
Yeah. I only did that with XX. I've never done it before. It was all about depression because I'm such a weirdo. But I think that's a pretty cool development.
You're doing
though.
God's work. You're doing God's work, Mary.
It's a cool development.
Good. But you guys are really good at that, the secret message thing. Okay, so wait, what are the four quadrants? Wait, okay, so secret messages.
Chronicling. Pushing music forward where you're thinking of other bands and you're like, I'm going to do that, but better. I think of their like the musical, like when you're very muso about it and you're like, I'm going to push forward this, like what I'm doing right now. I keep saying art rock because I've leaned into art rock where I'm like, this is my OK Computer. You know what I mean? Like where you're thinking of other music, basically. And then the fourth quadrant, which is kind of amorphous to me, is the I'm pulling magic from the universe. I'm transmitting. I'm channeling.
Right.
I'm doing something weird.
Well, one thing I've heard you say today that really strikes me is how you approach songwriting from this super conscious place, but you can also do the magic part. Because I feel like it's hard to have a foot in both of those.
It is hard to have a foot in both those worlds. It is
yeah.
Like you don't get, if you're going to do magic,
like
you don't get a choice. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's hard. Yeah. I mean, but that's cool to hear you talk about it because it makes me realize you're a real crafts person. Yeah. So you can exist in all, it's true. I know exactly what you mean. And like Lindsay's saying, the place you've been working from is getting really in touch with your emotion and that using that emotion, even for your performance, you're saying like of the song when you're recording it too, right?
So you can feel the agonies.
I definitely think that there's like very much something to like a take where you're crying. I'm like a pretty intense psycho about it where I'm just like, if I can't like really channel this deep sadness, the take is just not gonna, it's not gonna take. The take will not take. It's kind of like, I don't know. It feels like
the take will not take.
It's almost literally the same with every single show. Like we did a tour where almost every night I cried during the last song. And somehow I could not muster that for that long. But just like being like allowing yourself to just be like in the vibe of the song, like in the situation, like while you're singing it or like while you're recording it, I've found like I just got to be like really sad about this for like 20
Ooh,
minutes. Like
it sounds really hard.
Yeah,
though.
Hard.
Like it could really, really be tough, but that's great. I mean, as long as you can do it in a way where you're not like re-injuring yourself or something, I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think
that,
the audience
that
will appreciate
bad.
That.
Huh?
It's kind of like acting. Like the audience
yeah.
will appreciate that. Like it's like you need to make the acting because when you perform it on stage, then you know, they are hoping to feel that coming off you. And so I totally, I'm impressed that, Lindsay, you take it to that level, because sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you're just trying to not fuck up or trying to stay with the band, but like they want to see us. And I think this is the weakest thing that I need to work the most on, is making sure you act each song from the headspace, like, and not act in a campy way. Like, you know, it's, I'm a little jealous, Lindsay, because it sounds like you're a natural. And if anything gets me jealous, it's those natural performers.
Yeah, she is 100%.
Come on, y'all.
No, you, okay.
Come on, well, y'all.
No, Lindsay, you're 100% natural performer. I mean, it's like, I could tell that the minute I heard you sing. Just flows Thank out you. Of you supernaturally.
And that, and it's so cool on the songs. Like the first song that I remember really of Snail Mail was Thinning. Like I just remember hearing that in it already, this sort of natural performer. It kind of reminded me a little bit of like Yola Tango in some ways. There was like, maybe that was in the drums or whatever, but like there's just this, as if it was what people used to say about me that I didn't think was actually true. But I thought it was true of you, that like it's as if we're like, you just sprang out completely complete like that. Like that song couldn't have been written any other way. And it sounded like nothing I had ever heard really before. It sounded very left field to me, but yet echoed with all the things that I was familiar with that were before your time. So I was kind of freaked out by that a little bit. I remember being like, who is this? You know what I mean? Like this kind of like someone has like the spider web and you can see someone's crawling in it. You can feel it, but there, and you're like, wait, I sense a presence. You know, there's a presence. Wow.
Like, oh, thank you.
You were so young to have that kind of mastery of not only your own voice and your own songwriting, but also a shared history that you were too young for. Like, how did you do that?
It's so weird that you said that. I haven't actually thought about the, like, how the, like, vibe of the album, like, the way it got interpreted was, like, super 90s at the time. I haven't thought about that in a while. And the reason that it's crazy is just, for me, it's just because I actually didn't know most of the bands that we were getting compared to yet until after Lush came out. And so I do feel like there was like 90s music that I liked. Like there was a, I knew like a little, but I definitely was like, oh, cool. Like I like this stuff and I can hear what people are saying, but I also don't personally, like, it's so weird. It's like, it's not, I didn't know that I was channeling anything.
How did that happen?
It's weird. I remember like when I was little, I never wanted to write songs. It was like my biggest fear. I just was like, I was always like saying I wanted to be a guitar player, but not a singer, because I didn't have anything to say. And I just was like, really, to me, like the concept of like having to write like that was like something that just wasn't even worth, like, I was like, no. And then when I got a little older and I started writing, it felt like, I thought it sounded like more unique than it is. I thought it sounded like when I heard it, I was like, it felt like something that just came out and felt, I was like, oh, that's my song. Like it didn't, I didn't understand the like the way that it sounds so much like, I mean, a lot of other things now, but also like things then. So it was cool to like find that out later, because I was like, oh cool, it's like I kind of feel like I found a lot of music I liked, but also
it wasn't derivative at all. Like, it was somehow synthesized properly. It was properly digested within you and then grew out of you in a weird way. Like, you listen to college radio stations at all? Like, were you listening to any college? How did that happen then? I need to know.
I don't know, because my parents weren't really like rocker type. They like Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know what I mean? Like, it's a whole different category of, I don't know. I think, like, something must have been subconscious. I mean, I liked Liz, like, I was listening to your music. Like, there was a few things that I definitely, like songwriters, where I was like, Mary, I had, like, heard some Helium stuff. Like, but it's weird, like, I definitely wasn't, like, hip. Like, that was before I really was like, oh, cool, like, I like all this stuff. I had just, like, I don't know, I had, like, spent a good amount of time on YouTube. Maybe that was, like, the, just, like,
that's
clicking
fascinating.
On, like, music videos. And I guess at just some point, like, now I really can, like, understand. And I do think, like, a lot of stuff, it sounds, like, so different now as I, like, kind of, like, figure out what I like or whatever, but
wait, you mean the new record sounds different, or
it's super different? Okay. It's super, oh, super different, but not that different. Uh-huh. It's not so much, but it is kind of, people can't see what I'm doing. I'm pointing in a lot of directions, but no spoilers. So anyway,
was no more explicable even when we saw it. Yeah, we still didn't know what you were doing. You're like, it was like the hand gesture didn't quite translate into the, like, I don't know. Like, it went from up to down. Like, you're saying it's like in another, you've moved into a different quadrant than people are expecting, which you have to. Like, I mean, you have to.
Yeah. But wait a second. Wait, Lindsay, I wanted to say my stuff for you.
Oh, shit.
Because I have a question for you about your lyrics. Okay, so here's my thing. I spent a lot of time with, like, at least 3 or 4 Snail Mail songs, because I have a student, because I teach guitar too. It's one of my day jobs, and which is fun. But my student, Maddie, is a huge super fan, so... I think you met her, actually. And we learned at least 4 Snail Mail songs. So I spent hours on YouTube analyzing your fingers.
That's
and
so
stuff.
Great.
Yeah. But I really saw through her, and just, it was just so cool to see how your stuff was resonating with her emotionally. And, you know, really amazing. And anyway, I have a question. The one I wanted to ask you about was... wait, hold on. I have 2. I was Heat Wave, but then also Let's Find an Out. Because first of all, that guitar part's really hard, because I spent a long time trying to figure it out. Like, the finger picking pattern is like, I had a really hard time figuring it out.
It's just like everything is a little bit psychotic. That's like what everything, yeah. everything, it, like, it doesn't sound that hard, but all of it is just like psycho. It's just like psych. There's like,
well, the thing about it that
I respect that so much.
Yeah. It's complicated. And like the thing that I think, I don't remember fully, but I think the pattern changes a lot in the actual finger picking pattern. That was like crazy, because it was like one of the first songs Maddie did finger picking for. And I was like, it was like, she did a great job, but it was really a challenge because the pattern changes around a lot. Also, you're always in alternate tunings, so that makes it really
right.
Hard too.
Glowing red, oh, strawberry.
ask you about the lyrics, because that's one I actually, so but for both of you guys, I selfishly chose songs that I just want to know more about the lyrics. because let's find it out. Is there anything about the lyrics you can tell us? Because I feel like Heatwave, I get it's really awesome and I understand, but I feel like I understand the lyrics, but let's find it out. It's more mysterious to me.
Honestly, that song, I would definitely say, like, a lot of it is sort of, like, it was just, like, a little too pretentious for, like, what my writing level was at the time. Genuinely, I was a little in over my head, and I genuinely think a lot of it doesn't make sense to me now. Okay. At the time, I was like, oh, wow, this is, like, And now I'm like, what the fuck? I know that doesn't, I don't
okay.
know. But I was singing about like already being burnt out. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's that's a lot of the metaphors to me. I just am like, what was I saying? Like I feel like at the time, I don't know, but and I also made it. That's one of the few songs that is like I think is like deeply encoded, just because I didn't want to like sound ungrateful. Gotcha. And wow. I wanted to write about it, but I was like, who even cares if I'm tired? So I was like, well, I'm just going to write about it. And nobody has to know what it means but me. But now?
Because the emotion comes across, you know? Like, the emotion definitely comes across, so.
Some people, I've noticed over the years, people don't like it when you say what your songs are about sometimes.
Really?
They get upset.
Fuck them.
Yeah.
Why
but I mean,
like
you guys
them?
Are songwriters. I have no idea. We're in the safe space here.
I don't usually get
a good reaction. Yeah, they don't. They're like.
They don't have songs that have anything about them. So they're mad when people do.
I fucking love this Lindsay. This is my favorite Lindsay yet. Like the sitting back.
I'm definitely Lindsay 10.0 at this point. A lot has gone down.
Lockdown agreed with you. Huh? I feel like I'm losing my mind. I said lockdown agreed with you, and I feel like I'm like about to die.
It's crazy. It really did.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yes. No.
You're thriving.
not me thriving right now. This is when I'm just doing super well. Like.
Oh, wait, you guys, let's do an all three harmony on this was a great first ever Matador History Revisionist podcast.
Okay, give a note.
This was a great first revisionist.
Wait, I was just doing Mary's.
This was a great revisionist history podcast.
That was beautiful. It's a hit, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
That was so good. That's very stressful.
Right, I love it.